Hi, it's Beth. It's episode 81, Friday, March 13th, 2020. This is my seventh day of incarceration. I am staying out of the world because I'm over 65. I've got adult onset asthma. My husband has heart conditions. We are not going to be very successful at contracting the coronavirus. We might end up in a hospital bed, so we're not going to do it. So we're just, it's amazing. Like, I slept this morning till 10:30 and I was thrilled to death because I knocked out like 3 hours of just doing nothing or whatever. It's hard. It's hard because my car works, which it usually doesn't. I've been marooned before, but I knew that my car was going to get fixed and it was going to get better. This time, I don't know when this is going to end. And it's kind of just unnerving. But who cares, right? Who cares? You know, not the worst thing in the world. Okay, so I didn't finish my story with Scheherazade because the ending is so bizarre. It's a happy ending, right? Okay, I couldn't do it. The other day, I was too tired. I was emotionally distraught, probably. Today, I can't really do it, but I have to finish it out. Okay, so here's the happy ending for Scheherazade. After 1,001 nights of her storytelling, having her head on the chopping block, the king decided that he loved her madly and that he would marry her. So they had 3 sons. And they live happily ever after. I'm like, really? Let's say I'm Scheherazade's mother. Do you think I'm ever going to go to sleep at night calm? The guy is a serial murderer of 1,000 virgins. And he just thinks for 5 minutes that Scheherazade is so different. If I were her mother, I'd say, look, if he goes camping, if he goes on a hunting trip, you never leave his sight because he's going to think you're cheating on him. This guy has an edge. He's insane. He's crazy. Just make sure you are never out of his sight. And no, I wouldn't be calm. Like, that's crazy. She saved an entire generation of women. I get it. But man, that guy, how can you make a man like that happy? How? He's murdered 1,000 women. Like, this is a crazy person. These are the stories we were raised on. This is like Beauty and the Beast. I remember watching that movie thinking, whoa. Okay, she reads some books. I get it. Turned him into a handsome prince from a beast. How long's that gonna last? That's my attitude. I just don't buy happily ever after when you're dealing with a psychopath. I just don't see it. I don't see that your good heart can change a sociopathic mind, a psychopath. I'm not into it. So thank God it wasn't her mother. Thank God. But so I did that. And then I moved on and to my next story, which was going to be about Rudyard Kipling, who I am in love with, right? Okay. So, started out, he's a genius. I love his whole life story. It's very tortured. Came to Vermont, wrote his best stuff. He had a trouble with his brother-in-law. Okay, but found out 2 things. I've got to go back, but I don't want to. 2. Rudyard Kipling, they think, was gay. He did go to British prep schools from the age of 6, which doesn't bode well for sexual normality, I suppose. But fell in love with this. Well, they say he fell in love with this guy. The guy died, right? Then he married the guy's sister. And Henry James got them married and he said, this marriage isn't going to last. I'm like, what? I didn't even know this. I'm like, research is sometimes the worst thing you ever want to do. Because you were happy. You were happy with the 6 things you knew. And now you're going to find out 500 more things that are going to screw it up. Okay, so this is kind of screwed up. So there's that. And he married this girl, and they say she was bitter and kind of a, what, I don't know, what, a shrew. That was the word they used back then. And I'm like, well, you know what? Now I'm starting to understand it. If, you know, it was her brother's lover, and they got married within 1 week after the guy's death. I'm like, you know, maybe she wasn't such a bad girl. Maybe there's two sides to every story. And this starts me on my little path, okay? So, you know, that's happening. And then, you know, we've got Gunga Din. That's a great story. He did the Jungle Book. In Gunga Din, he had a water carrier. This nothing in the British service become this hero in this story, in this poem. And at the end, Gunga Din becomes this British soldier's friend. And he almost dies, and then he risks the rest of his life to save this British soldier. And at the end of the poem, the last line is, Gunga Din was a better man than he. That wasn't done 100 years ago. He was a good man, in a way. And then he did my two favorite stories, movies that turned into movies in the whole world, except for Sullivan's Travels, which we'll talk about next. Preston Sturges, we'll go there. But one is A Man Who Would Be King with Michael Caine and Sean Connery. It is a classic. If you haven't seen it during this little period where we're supposed to stay inside, it would be an evening you would never forget. And then if you have children, grandchildren, whatever, the next one is absolutely amazing. It's called Captain's Courageous. And it's the story of this little boy, and it's got Spencer Tracy, and he won an Academy Award, and he deserved it. And it is the greatest story with the best ending you will ever see. So if you're stuck inside, you can check those two out. But unfortunately, I went on. I should have stopped. I knew it, but I didn't. And we go on, and he did this thing, Rudyard Kipling, which was The White Man's Burden. And it was kind of like Christianity or whatever, very British imperialism, that the whole rest of the world needs to be like British people. Well, it's knocked him out of all of the universities, a lot of them. And they just don't study this man anymore. And I'm telling you, if you did, he's done some absolutely beautiful things. And I can't even read the poem If anymore because I'm so upset. But yeah, he's a goner now. And you know what I'm thinking? I hope this lens, this absolute perfect lens that we're looking into the past with and finding so many faults with people, I hope we don't use this on ourselves 60 years from now. I'll be gone, thank God. But, you know, we are watering our lawn with drinkable water. While a lot of the world doesn't have drinkable water, I just wish we would stop being so self-righteous. And we would use a little tiny bit of humility and understand that people are dealing with the worlds that they live in. And just quit being self-righteous. So, really upset with that because that was going to be my theme, but I couldn't do it because of this thing happened, this one thing he did, you know, God. So, I'm going to go into another story, which is Where I Can't Be Hurt, which is the story of my two finches. Finches, birds, yes. When I was first married, we got two finches named Pete and Phoebe. They were lovely. I didn't know anything about finches. Just ran out and bought them, right? There weren't books, not an internet. Nobody did anything. Okay, so all of a sudden they're screwing. I'm like, oh my God, what is going on? So I go back to the pet shop and he says, buy this little nest. It was a little wicker nest. I put it up in the bird cage, and Phoebe had three eggs. And then he told me to get this hair stuff, this gossamer wing stuff, and I did, and they created a beautiful nest. It was within like 5 months of having these guys. I was so enthralled, and they had conversations, and you could really understand Pete. He was amazing. So then the babies are born. And Pete, then meanwhile, I have to tell you that Pete and Phoebe were a bit like George and Martha. They fought a lot. A lot. A lot of bickering. Like, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? Only in a birdcage. And so, but they got these babies, and Pete was teaching them how to fly, teaching them how to eat, teaching them how to talk, and it was adorable. So I found this man who loved finches, and he turned his garage into a finch sanctuary. So I gave him a lot of money, and he took the babies, because I couldn't keep the babies. I could have, you know, in retrospect, I don't know what I was thinking. I probably could have. Now I feel bad. Oh my God, I'm just feeling terrible. The coronavirus just has me feeling terrible about everything. Anyway, I did not keep the babies. And so then another year goes by. They have another set of babies. And one of them pops out when I'm cleaning the birdcage and flies into this huge window, falls down. And Pete nursed that baby bird. I mean, it was stunned for days, back into flying. I mean, I watched him coach this bird every day. It was, and I felt bad too, because that was part of the problem. So all that went on. And then we gave those birds to this guy too. Hundreds of bucks, happy to have him. And he was a great guy. And this bird sanctuary was really cool. And he was building one outside with more money that he'd gotten, an aviary for the summer. And it was absolutely gorgeous. He was out in the country. I'm trying to validate my behavior, but I really didn't feel bad about it till now, till I'm talking to you about it now. I say that I probably should have kept them myself, but I didn't. Okay, so anyway, that summer, Phoebe, they were fighting pretty bad, the two of them. You know, like they tried to clean it up when I got home, but I could hear it in the garage. They cleaned it up when I got in the house. And I had a German Shepherd that knew everything. He didn't tell me any of it. So anyway, Phoebe lost all of the feathers on her neck. I was like, oh my God, she's got some disease. So I took her to the bird doctor. And the bird doctor told me they were fighting. They were having marital problems. And he was throwing her across the cage. Pete, St. Pete of goodness and trueness, when I wasn't there, was throwing her across the cage. I mean, she was a bitch. I get it. But what? So he said, this is what you do. Get another cage. Put it on. I had this kitchen with, you know, those cut-throughs where the kitchen could see into the playroom. I had this long, like, bar, whatever you call it, where you could put bar stools up to it. And I put one cage on one end and one on the other. He said, yeah, do that. And then within 2 weeks, move his cage 2 feet closer to hers. Do this for 6 months. Just keep moving it a little closer and a little closer and a little closer. Well, I moved this up, because I thought they were getting along better. I could understand their conversation. And within 3 months, they were right next to each other in their separate cages. And their bodies were touching through the cages. And I was like, oh my God, he can't take it. He's sorry. He is sorry. He's really, really, really sorry. So I put him back together. And they had another group. And, you know, they don't live that long either. So, like, you know, 6 months was like 15 years in their lives. So I was like, you know, I shortened it, put them back together. They had another set of babies. Nothing bad ever happened again. She had all her feathers on her neck. But they had this group of babies, and there were only two. And one of them died. He was teaching them how to fly, and he was talking to them the way he did. He was such a great dad. And he kept trying to get that baby on the ground to fly and to talk. And it just didn't work out. And I'll tell you what, Pete was never the same. I don't think, he was dead within 3 weeks. He didn't eat anymore. He didn't care anymore. He just sat by that baby. And when I took the baby out, He just stayed right where that baby was. I mean, he never moved. He didn't fly. He just kept talking and talking and talking in that exact spot where the baby was. So Phoebe lasted for about 6 months longer than that. And that little baby they had, I got him to the sanctuary. But Pete never, ever recovered. He just never did. And he died right there on that spot. And that's what happened. And it was a beautiful love story. I mean, maybe they weren't perfect. Like, who's perfect? And maybe they didn't even like each other. Not that much. But they brought goodness into the world. And when push came to shove, Phoebe would go down there with food and try to feed it to him. And he just wouldn't eat it. But she never got mad. She didn't yell at him like she usually did with his screeching. She just was kind. So at the end of the day, when all hell broke loose, Pete and Phoebe were kind to each other. And Pete just died of a broken heart. And those are my birds. I mean, finches are amazing. Love is amazing. And we just have to remember that. Like where we're going through this, I mean, those stupid birds, this is the point of the story. I forgot it. The point of the story is Pete and Phoebe lived their entire lives in that cage. And they lived beautiful lives. Amazing lives. With ups and downs. And even abuse and whatever else. I don't even know. I mean, I'm not saying Pete was perfect. I'm not. He was wrong. And I get it. And he was incarcerated for it. And I get it. I don't know. I'm overdoing it. As usual. But what I'm trying to say is, they lived their entire life in cages. They were caged. I feel like I'm being caged. I had a dream about them last night because I feel like I'm in their cage on the counter, just looking out that one window. And I can't go anywhere. And I can't do anything. And I just have to eat the food in the refrigerator and drink the water in the tap, just like they did. And maybe this is just how it is right now. But finches are amazing and love is amazing. And, you know, this was really supposed to be about Rudyard Kipling. And then, you know, we ran into that whole problem with the white man's problem. And so, you know, I just had to go to Pete and Phoebe. I have to go somewhere where I can be happy. And that's what I'm trying to do right now. So I hope you enjoyed the story of Pete and Phoebe. I hope you never think of African zebra finches the same way again. They are remarkable creatures. They spoke a language to each other. I understood everything they said. I knew when they were yelling. I knew when they were happy. And when Phoebe tried to make them eat towards the end of her life, I never heard her ever sing a song like that. It was the most beautiful song she ever sang. And he just couldn't hear it. So, anyway, this is the story of my finches, and I'll talk to you later. Let's just keeping on. We can get out of here. This coronavirus can't last forever. I can tell you're worried. I'm a little bit cracking up, and I understand that. But let's just keep, you know, doing this as awkwardly and as badly as we can. All right? It's no fun. It's no fun being told you can't go outside. It's no fun being told you're just going to be part of the problem if you do. So I'm not expecting anything from anybody else. I'm not really expecting anything from myself. I'm just trying to, what is it? Stay the course. Okay? So I will talk to you later and just keep healthy, my friends. Bye-bye.